This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
But you have to understand that it is human for people to want to be with their family and for family members to have their loved one being close to them during serious illness.
That's World Health Organization spokesman Tarik Jasarovic talking about the impact of Ebola patients fleeing quarantine. Details next.
Also, thousands of people continue to flee violence in the Central African Republic.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, two Ebola patients who fled a hospital quarantine area in the DRC later attended a prayer meeting, potentially putting the 50 to 60 attendees at risk of contracting the disease. Aid agencies now must track down everyone they came in contact with to vaccinate them. That complicates efforts to contain the outbreak, which began in two remote villages before spreading to the provincial capital of Mbandaka. It has killed 27 people so far. The escapees underscore the painful process of putting people in isolation, separating them from their families. As Doctors Without Borders said in a statement, forced hospitalization is not the solution. World Health Organization spokesman Tarik Jasarovic downplayed the incident, saying it wasn't unexpected. Speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander, he blamed it on human nature.
We are aware of what happened yesterday. Unfortunately, this is not something that is unexpected. It is very unfortunate that people left the isolation unit. But you have to understand that it is human for people to want to be with their family and for family members to have their loved one being close to them during serious illness like this. What we really have to focus on now is really to work with the community to explain that having a sick person at home presents risk to the whole of the family, because then family will be in contact with body fluids and can get infected. So the teams on the ground are obviously looking into who may have got in contact with these individuals since they left the hospital. But we also really have to work with the community for them to understand how dangerous it is to have a sick people who may have Ebola to be close to their family and to the community, and how big the risk of that is. So really, community engagement is the key. We have people on the ground really trying to explain that, so community gets engaged and work with us to stop this outbreak.
So how much does something like this complicate things?
Well, obviously, we will have to see how many people are potentially being in contact during this particular event. But it does not really change the fact that we need to do proper contact tracing for all the cases who have been confirmed probable or suspect, and that we need to vaccinate these people.
Do you have any sort of idea as to, during this prayer meeting, whether they were coming in contact with other people there?
Well, this is exactly what our teams on the ground do in support to the work of the Ministry of Health, really identifying everyone who have been in contact with people who have been tested positive for Ebola, not only during for this particular event, but in general, because this is the basis first for determining who is eligible for vaccination, but also for contact tracing program, so we make sure that people who get sick are actually provided with the supportive treatment. We just need to see who may be added to our already established list of contacts who should be followed and who would be eligible for the vaccination.
Doctors Without Borders says health workers are running into stumbling blocks in explaining the risk of Ebola and how the vaccine works. The aid agency says some people see the whole thing as witchcraft, and there have been threats against doctors coming in to help. WHO says about 10,000 people should be vaccinated within the next month, starting with health workers and friends and relatives of those who have contracted the disease.
The Minister of Health of the Democratic Republic of Congo says the current trend of Ebola infections is typical. Dr. Oli Ulanga Kalanga told VOA's James Buddy late yesterday more cases are expected in the coming days.
For us, we know also that the incubation period is 21 days. So it means that all the people we are tracing today who were in contact with Ebola cases are at risk to develop the disease in the coming days. So for us, it's not unexpected. So we expect in the coming days an increase of cases among the contact.
However, Kalanga said he thinks the outbreak can be limited to the DRC, as his government and international organizations have moved quickly to contain the spread.
The best reaction is not to panic, it's just to take the appropriate step to contain the virus and to monitor, I think surveillance, people tracing the people in contact with the disease people, and the tracing of contact and the hygiene measures are still the best weapon.
The greatest concern, he said, is the presence of the virus in the provincial capital, Mbandaka, which has more than a million residents. But the minister said there are strict measures in place to protect those entering and leaving the city.
To check temperature of people who are leaving Mbandaka or those who are arriving in Mbandaka. When you arrive in Mbandaka today, when you are leaving Mbandaka, you have a chlorine solution to wash hands. And I think also all the cars, the people entering Mbandaka are monitored for temperature. I think all these measures taken around the zone, the area of Equator, will help us to contain the outbreak.
That was Dr. Oli Ulanga Kalanga, the Minister of Health for the DRC. He spoke with our colleague, James Butty. Kalanga has also spoken with our colleagues in the VOA's French to Africa service.
Thousands of people continue to flee violence in the Central African Republic, and the United Nations says many lack access to humanitarian care. Its response plan, requesting $515 million launched in January, is barely 10% funded. Moki Edwin Kinzigo reports on the conditions of the refugees arriving in Cameroon's eastern town of Garoua, Boulaye.
Hundreds of Central Africans sing in the Cameroon border town of Garoua Boulaye to officially welcome 30 of their fellow citizens who crossed over from CAR to Cameroon within the past week. It has become a weekly event to welcome people fleeing the carnage and socially integrate them to their community or reunite them with family members. Among the newly arrived is 37-year-old Pierre Mangnu. He says he and his family were targeted by armed gangs firing automatic weapons and burning houses in areas of the CAR capital, Bangui, 2 weeks ago. He says in October 2017, he, his wife and two children returned from Congo, where they were in exile, and settled in their PK5 Muslim-dominated neighborhood, thinking that peace had returned.
Aujourd'hui, la guerre continue. La Centrafrique était divisée en trois groupes, les Seleka, les Balaka, et aussi les peuples.
He says bloody conflicts have continued in his country between Muslim Seleka fighters, Christian anti-Balakas, and some segments of the population. He says they do not want to live in uncertainty and have decided to flee for their lives while waiting for the UN peace mission to complete what he thinks is an unending task of bringing peace. The Central African Republic descended into bloodshed after longtime leader François Bozizé was overthrown in 2013 by a predominantly Muslim rebel alliance called the Seleka. Christian militias called the anti-Balaka emerged in response, accelerating a cycle of sectarian violence. In February 2016, Faustin Archange Touadéra, who promised to bring peace in the troubled nation, was elected president. CAR Minister of Humanitarian Activities, Virginie Baikua, visited Cameroon last week and says violence has continued, because it is hard to bring the various armed factions together for true dialogue.
Les regains de violence vont nous permettre de recadrer. Les regains de violence vont nous permettre de savoir qu'on n'a pas bien.
She says one of the most serious problems they have is the circulation of arms. She adds young people need a lot of education to understand that they are strong enough to contribute to the development of their country by working, not killing. UN Coordinator for Humanitarian Affairs for the CAR, Najat Rushdie, says the number of people needing urgent assistance has increased dramatically this year due to the resurgence of violence.
One quarter of the population is in a situation of vulnerability, fragility, and therefore it's very easy for them, you know, to be recruited by either the armed groups or the criminal gangs. 18% of children under 5 are dying. That's 18% of the future generation of the Central African who today are not even given a chance to live, not even to go to the school, just to live, which is the basic right of any human being.
She said 2.5 million CAR residents are in dire need of humanitarian assistance. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Garoua Boulaye, Eastern Cameroon.
16 past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. The United States, Britain, and Norway are calling on the Regional Bloc Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, to institute punitive measures against violators of the peace process in South Sudan. A meeting Tuesday of the High-Level Revitalization Forum ended without an agreement. Troika officials called for both regional and international sanctions to be imposed on peace obstructors and corrupt officials in South Sudan. South Sudan plunged into war 5 years ago between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar. Fighting has killed tens of thousands of people and left nearly 12 million homeless. Ambassadors from the three Western countries say the warring parties have not shown the political will to reach an agreement. U.S. Special Envoy for South Sudan, Brian Shukan, says the Troika is disturbed by reports of continued fighting in former unity state. This, despite the party's commitment to fully implement the secession of hostilities agreement signed last December. Shukan urged both sides to stop fighting to prove they are committed to making compromises and ending the conflict. Norway's special envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Erling Sokonsberg, says the Troika is looking for ways to introduce sanctions on individuals for corrupt practices and for obstructing the peace process. Last week, the African Union said it also would punish those who were obstructing peace.
As Liberians continue to recover and rebuild their lives from a decade of civil war and the devastating impact of the Ebola virus, women are beginning to gain access to information through an innovative program that includes dramas and is also open to men. I visited Po River in Kamara Town, where a local Freedom of Information Club is helping to empower women. Then-President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf signed Liberia's Freedom of Information Act into law in September of 2010, acknowledging the importance of having access to information. Liberia was the first country in West Africa to establish a comprehensive right to information law. The Carter Center's Global Access to Information Program has since joined forces with Liberia's government to provide women with vital information to improve their lives. Now, Freedom of Information Clubs are forming in rural areas, giving women new power.
It's called Freedom of Information. Now everybody, you free to ask questions.
Georgina Kama is head of the Freedom of Information Club, or FOI Club, in Kamara Town. She also directs dramas in the village that involve both women and men to provide vital information to the community.
The program is helping us a lot because there are more women I'm working with and have the idea on reading and writing. So sometimes I have to take my own time and talk to them. And the moment I give them information, they are willing to work with me. So it encouraged me more to do more on the FOI, and encouraged me more to send in more requests, and encouraged me more to gather information to share with them.
Among some of the major improvements from the hard work of Kama and others has been a reduction in the cost of education. Most families could not afford it, but after a great effort, which included a meeting with Johnson Sirleaf, schooling was made more affordable. The FOI program also has empowered women to become entrepreneurs.
Like, for example, in Kamaratan, when we first started the FOI, and the women here, we can put ourselves together. We were able to generate money on our own. We start facing soap right away.
Siru Kona Garlo is a gender specialist for the Liberia Carter Center Access to Information Program. She said the program helps women access information they did not know existed.
This program is needed because Carter Center runs a database that collects all information around people who file freedom of information requests. And the data show that women were not using the law as their male counterpart.
Kona highlighted that for most women in rural areas, the law was non-existent because, as busy moms, they did not have time to visit agencies to inquire about it, and many did not understand how the law could help them. So it was important that workers from the Carter Center and their support teams take the program to the women.
So women are so excited about knowing that they have rights, that freedom of information is a fundamental right, and they should exercise the rights. When we come to the community to do the awareness, the right to request information, this law, the freedom of information law, does not discriminate against who should receive and who should not receive.
Having knowledge and access to the Freedom of Information Act has empowered women. Also, in a land rights case that involved Po River community leader Georgina Kama and her sister, the Access to Information program provided them with access to information and guidance that led to her successfully keeping her land when a relative tried to take it. With the help of the FOI programs, Georgina and many other women have come to realize that knowledge truly is powerful. In addition to providing guidance on land use and ownership, the Access to Information program has helped women in civil cases, such as how to obtain child support. It has also helped them to understand whether their marriage is legal or not. And in other cases, the program has helped women make more effective decisions regarding agricultural practices and opportunities. Kim Lewis, VOA News, Po River, Liberia.
This week marks exactly 6 months since President Emmerson Mnangagwa took office in Zimbabwe after Robert Mugabe gave in to military pressure and resigned. Sebastian Mumfu reports from Harare on what Mnangagwa has done since November on his promises of jobs and improving the economy.
I appeal to all genuine patriotic Zimbabweans.
That was President Emmerson Mnangagwa last November promising to revamp Zimbabwe's economy. During the weekend, the 75-year-old politician told his supporters that since he took over, a lot had improved in Zimbabwe.
Kubva patakatanga kufamba rwendo iroro.
He says in the past, Zimbabwe's annual foreign direct investment was around $400 or $500 million, but for the past 5 months, it has gone to more than $15 billion committed into investment in this country with international companies and countries like Canada, South Africa, China, Britain, and the United States coming to invest in power generation and water. Last Tuesday, he says, the British gave $100 million to aid in trying to eliminate Zimbabwe's cash crisis. Then he goes into English discussing the country's methane gas reserves.
After 3.5 years, we should be able to produce 8 million liters of fuel per day. The country only consumes 5 million a day. 3 million liters plus year per day. Zimbabwe will prosper. Zimbabwe will shine, not only in SADC, but will shine in Africa, because Zimbabwe is in good hands. Our political party, ZANU-PF, is a revolutionary party. It caters for the interests of the people.
Chidoma Saisai, an unemployed former media student, says Zimbabwe's people have yet to see the money the president is talking about. She says there is still a shortage of cash and the black market continue to operate. What she does see is greater expression of political views, a significant change from the Mugabe era when authorities regularly harassed the president's critics and opponents.
But in terms of maybe freedom of expression, you find that a lot more people are liberal with their views and their opinions, and you find that there are a lot of political parties that have come into the fore.
Harare-based economist John Robertson says it is too early for Zimbabwe's economy to fully recover from Mugabe's populist policies, which drove away most foreign investment.
The economy is still in great difficulty, but you have to remember that the difficulties we face were built slowly into the system here by 38 years of very badly chosen economic policies. And I think that the media is largely responsible for increasing the expectations of the population beyond what was reasonably possible within a short period.
Robertson says Mnangagwa might make major policy changes, such as compensating white farmers for land that was confiscated during the Mugabe years and ensuring that black farmers can get bank loans instead of depending on government handouts.
I think this is why the president is waiting for the elections, so that with the elections behind him, he will have increased amounts of courage to make changes that will prove unpopular to the people who felt that they had not yet received what they were expecting.
The president is expected soon to announce a date for Zimbabwe's elections, which could take place in July or August. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.